A lifelong cannabis enthusiast, she was given the opportunity in 2013 to apply for and become Canadian MMPR License 005, taking the company public 6 months later, becoming the world's first female public cannabis company CEO. After exiting in 2015, Renee has focused on cannabis supply chain management. Welcome, Renee.
Thank you very much. So in 2014, we were awarded MMPR 005, which was an interesting experience and gave us a chance to experience what the government at the time had dictated would be the leading edge of their new cannabis strategy. I want to talk specifically about the differences between the marketplace in Canada and in the United States and some of the key major differences between what's going on. If you look at the United States, they have, in Canada, we have a federal medical program. In the United States, they don't have a federal program except a limited one started way back in the 70s. They've left it up to individual states. In Canada, the LPs have access to banking, the dispensaries don't. And in the United States, nobody within the cannabis sector has access to legitimate banking, which means that you have problems on raising capital and being able to pay your bills. You've got issues on zoning. Zoning has become now one of the biggest inhibiting factors in California, with most of the pre-zoned property that was available for production being speculated on. And zoning tends to be an Achilles heel in any of the programs, and it's usually one of the most not looked at. And there's a lot of jurisdictions that proactively banned dispensaries from existing years ago, and you have to start at the lobbying level now and continue forward. The biggest difference is that there is some federal support in Canada, zero federal support in the United States, and that ties into governance on product manufacturing, labeling, as we move towards legalization. Canada is an incredibly complicated and mixed up patchwork. We've got a combination of compassion clubs, dispensaries, licensed producers. The relationship between a patient and their doctor gets confused. You can't send them in their traditional direction towards a pharmacy. You have to direct them in two different directions, either to an LP or to a dispensary if they have products that you can't get from an LP. The problem is, once you start looking at the dispensaries, you've got for-profit, you've got non-profit. And the non-profit are typically run as compassion societies, and then the profit dispensaries are again in there for as a business method. The difficulty is there's no direct path for physicians to be able to prescribe the products that they want to the patients they want without having to channel the patient in either the gray or the black area or force them to go to the LP market. The biggest difference is going to be coming forward is that as different players want to start entering this, such as liquor distribution, private liquor, other various forms, it's going to make the area more difficult for patients to figure out how they can obtain their product and how they plan to move on. The big difference. In the United States, this market has been viewed with unbridled capitalism. Everywhere you go, people are putting down their money to create products and companies that we don't see here. It's been advancing so fast, you're starting to see companies producing terpene pucks, flavoring combinations, things that are very nuanced in the product level that we don't hear. But on both sides of the border, nobody's paying attention to the big things that will kill you later on, which come down to packaging, labeling, compliance, production standards. The United States is way farther ahead on almost every form of non-medicinal marijuana. Canada's got an advantage only by having a national program that's at least universally accessible Canada-wide. Revenue-wise, you see in the States, though, the recreational market is zooming, and it's going to be exceedingly gapping the medical. And then in states like Washington State, they collapse the medical. So this chart no longer applies. Canada, we've essentially got an oligopoly. You don't have unrestrained competition. You've got 31 licensed producers. You've got approximately anywhere from 400 to 500 dispensaries. You've got tens of thousands of MAR producers, you've got home growers, you've got an entire ecosystem Canada-wide that isn't represented by the 31 companies. patient growth has been continuous, but not spectacular. And when you look at the actual sales numbers coming in from the LPs, the top five take approximately 80% of the patient load. That's a very, very thin amount of traffic for the remaining LPs. Makes it very complicated, makes it very regulated, and in order to play within this space, your starting level of getting in is starting at 5 million, going upwards of 10 million before approval. That leads into some other problems. So, cost of compliance. This is one of the biggest arguments I get in Canada, is that because it's voluntary, we don't have any regulations for the folks outside the LP stack. It comes down to, do I have to? What's the point of this? Is there really any cost in it? Well, the cost of not complying is staggering. In Colorado, a non-compliance event could cost you $20,000 an incident. We haven't started seeing in Canada, Health Canada fining people for labeling, but they have the ability to level tens of thousands of dollars per incident per fine. And that is only going to escalate as they find themselves more frustrated through the traditional means of punishing people. They're going to start going to the other methods, which includes mislabeling. It includes accidentally mislabeling it. It means not putting lot numbers on it. And if you don't know what a lot number is, you've already got yourself down the creek there. Compliance has an expense, yes, but the cost of not complying is up to three times whatever it is you didn't do in the first place. The biggest problem among the MMPR, if anybody's done it or if you've been in it, the compliance burden is staggering. The people that you need to dedicate to specifically managing compliance is excessive. You can't have one QA working in three facilities. You have to have a QA for every one. And this means that you've got hiring problems. You've got issues of where you're built. The ability to just destroy garbage would make you think of decommissioning Soviet nuclear stockpiles. It's unnecessary, but it does exist. And the problem is you can choose to not comply and hope to get along, or you can start investigating what the simple compliance is that will help you get you through this next stage. It's not all about bank vaults and security cameras. It's actually more to do with paperwork. And if you're not into paperwork, this is not a good industry for you. Rich White Guy Club. That's kind of the problem. And what the central sort of under threat for the dispensary industry in Canada and North America wide. The cost of getting into the LP business, as I said, is anywhere from $3 to $10 million. And that pretty much excludes 99.9% of women and minorities. To my way of thinking, the dispensary model is the only affordable, out-of-the-box solution that allows more people to participate with a greater spread of economic starting point, and then we let Darwin decide. The thing about retail and capitalism is that the customers always eventually decide who are the ones that they prefer. They go to the stores they prefer. They buy the brands they prefer. Once you set up an oligopoly or a monopoly where you say you may only buy from the following, it inevitably will create a back. We already buy from the black market. I spent 30 years buying from the black market before there was a legal source. Most of the people here did because there wasn't LPs. They're not going to go away. The question is, how do we legitimize it? How do we bring it forward? And how do we bring that productive capacity into the overall? And the only way to do it is to bring them higher up towards the LPs. We can't bring them down. And again, on the minority issues, we have to remember that in the United States specifically, minorities paid the heaviest price for the drug war. In Canada, it was also the same when you look at Aboriginal incarceration. And when we look at economic impact, this industry is zero right now. We're just starting. We can choose to ignore equality and diversity and hope it'll all figure out later, but I can guarantee you it won't happen because the system won't do it voluntarily. If we want women and minorities to be involved in cannabis in a significant fashion, it has to start now, and we can't do it by automatically defaulting to a massive corporate model. It automatically makes it a rich white guy club. But my real reason that we need to interfere less, we believe in capitalism supposedly, we believe in a free market supposedly, We believe in retail, supposedly, but on this subject, it's somewhere between nuclear radiation and evil. And the problem is that isn't the way it works. When you want to buy bread, you don't mail order it and wait a month. When you want milk, you don't mail order it and wait a month. You want to walk into a store like an adult, a competent human being, show your ID, put down money, buy what you want, and walk out without the judgment of society on you. And this is where we need to head, regardless of what the government wants, regardless of what activists want, regardless of what corporations want. The public wants to buy weed, they want to do it in a store, and they don't want to feel like criminals. And it behooves all of us to work on making that happen. Control's an illusion on this product. It pre-existed humans. It's pre-existed every civilization that's legalized or made it illegal. It's predated all of us in this room. It doesn't matter how old you are in this room. You weren't here first. It was. And as long as we keep fighting each other on who was here longer, who was bigger, who raised the most money, who's the most organic, the other side gets to divide us, conquer us, and ignore us. We're all in cannabis, we're all working on cannabis, and there is no right way. The plant predates us all. So on that note, I want to say thank you, and I want you to ponder that whatever you're doing right now, do more. Don't wait for the government to approve you. Don't wait for the city council to approve you. We're all doing it. Do it simultaneously. We all advance together at the same time. They can't stop it.